Morning, everybody. How y'all doing? This is the first Meet the Fed panel that we've had at Black Hat. We've been running DEF CON for, I guess, about 6 or 7 years in the last 10. We had a kind of hiatus in 2002 and 2003 because the feds were busy. Kind of what we're going to do this morning is we're going to talk a little bit about the OODA loop, and we'll explain what that is. And then we've got multiple agencies represented. We even went international this year. We have Jason Beckett from the Sydney Police Department in Australia. And what we're going to do is I'm going to do a quick bio on each person and give them a couple of minutes to make an opening statement. And then we're just going to open it up to questions from you guys. And I'm hoping the questions will be a lot more civil than what we're going to get at DEF CON tomorrow. So the OODA loop was basically a little bit of history on the OODA loop. Was there was a fighter pilot back in the 70s, Colonel John Boyd, and he came up with this strategy for pilots that basically said that if you could observe your enemy, orient yourself, and decide what to do and act before they could, you had a much greater chance of surviving in a lethal environment. We think that this OODA loop theory actually applies to what we do in defending our networks. So now we're going to start with our the bio. So we'll start at the far end, work ourselves around. Jason Beckett is the director of the State Electronic Evidence Branch of the Special Services Group of the New South Wales Police Department, Sydney, Australia. Former inspector with Special Services Group before moving to the corporate world as a director of forensics for a multinational, so you became a godless contractor. In 2003, he was invited back to South Wales Police Force. Why? You had wit on somebody? And now he holds numerous qualifications, computer science, engineering, forensics, and a PhD in forensics computing. Ovi Carroll, I've known Ovi for a long time. He's a veteran of this panel. He's currently the director of the Cybercrime Lab at the Department of Justice Computer Intellectual Property Section. And prior to that, he has 20 years law enforcement experience. He started out with OSI, Air Force Office Special Investigations, as a computer crime investigator. Retired and went to the U.S. Postal Service, Office of Inspector General. So welcome, Ovi. And Tim Fowler, Naval Criminal Investigative Service Special Agent. He's a Marine Special Agent. Didn't know the Marines had special agents. So, okay, no comment. Tim is an active duty Marine Special Agent, worked as a cyber agent for Naval Criminal Investigative Service Cyber Department in D.C. For the last 6 years. Tim has 19 years active duty service in the U.S. Marine Corps. And he's done lots of things there. But what's really cool is Tim is also was awarded the Bronze Star with a Combat Valor device by the Secretary of the Navy for media exploitations in the war effort in Iraq. So thanks for that, Tim. Andy Freed, our favorite agency, IRS. Andy is a senior special agent with the Treasury Inspector General for Tax Administrations. Anybody want to, how many of you underreported your taxes last year? Okay, we've got one back here. Okay. During his 17-year career with Treasury, he was credited with developing the agency's Computer Investigative Specialist program. And I met Andy back in 1986 while he had just stopped working for Kennedy Space Center, where he Andy wrote the first forensic tools that everybody in the world in law enforcement used. They didn't work real well, but it was the only thing we had. But he was the first to write forensic software. Bob Hopper, National White Collar Crime Center, old friend. Real old, you can tell by his hair. He's currently manages the NW3C computer crime instructor cadre, providing computer forensics training to state and local law enforcement agencies throughout the United States. Prior to that, he just retired from the Arizona Department of Public Safety after 37 years in law enforcement. You're an old son of a bitch, aren't you?
I'm so old.
Damn.
And scary.
Hopper's law enforcement career included assignments in narcotics. That's what made him gray. Air smuggling, white collar crime, organized crime, and he developed and managed the Arizona Department of Public Safety's computer forensics lab. Forensics lab grew from a two-man unit in 1998 to a state-of-the-art computer forensics lab in 2005 when he retired, and nearly 25 computer forensic examiners now. So, a pioneer. Tim Huff, special agent with the FBI. He's got a computer and information science degree back in 95 from Jacksonville University.
85.
Cool. United States Naval officer from 85 to 96 and entered duty with the FBI in 96. Assigned to the Pittsburgh field office, certified as a computer analysis response team forensic examiner. And I believe you run that unit now, right?
Yes.
Cool. And you were in Popular Science, was it?
Yes.
Yes. And I guess a couple of months ago, what kind of case was that, Tim?
It was a child enticement, child abduction case.
Cool. So, thanks, Tim. Mike Jacobs, Vice President, Director of Cyber National Security Programs for SRA International. Mike joined SRA in October of 2002 after he retired as the Director of Information Assurance for NSA. Mike's been on the panel for several years. And several awards, and if you go to the website, you can see the bio because it's about four pages long. But Mike is one of the leaders, one of the senior guys that started this effort. He was also the mayor of College Park, Maryland. So when College Park burned down, whenever the University of Maryland lost the basketball game or whatever, you know, Mike was always on TV, which really made NSA happy. Bob Lentz, Bob was one of my bosses. Before I left OSD, he's the Director of Information Assurance for the Office of Secretary of Defense Network and Information Integration, which is basically the CIO of the Department of Defense. Mr. Lentz has lots of awards as well and lots of experience, and he's pretty old too. God, look at this. We'll just skip over it because you can see those bios. You know, you're not my boss anymore, so I don't have to take care of you. Ken Privett, U.S. Postal Inspector Service, IG. Ken is presently works as special agent in charge of the Computer Crime Unit at U.S. Postal IG. His unit has computer intrusion investigation, provides computer forensic support for over 450 agents who conduct investigations for the Postal Service. I met Ken when he was a naval criminal investigative service agent, and then he got a better offer from the Defense Criminal Investigative Service, and you know he can't hold a job. He's about his third or fourth agency now. Special Agent David Thomas. Dave is designated as a special agent in FBI in 1989. After completing a dozen years as a supervisor in leadership roles, violent crime, domestic terrorism, and the National Infrastructure Protection. Dave was appointed chief of the cyber division for the FBI's computer intrusion unit back in 2001. So that's kind of the bios on our guys. At this point, we'd like to start with Jason and let everybody have two or three minutes to make an opening statement, and then we're going to open it up to you guys for questions. Jason.
Yeah. Thanks, Jim.
Use the microphone, please.
Yep. Thanks, Jim. Thanks for the invite. In Australia, it's about 2 a.m., so I'm a little bit worse for wear. New South Wales Police is the third largest law enforcement agency in the world, so when you start thinking about how we respond to incidents and provide services, we are as large as some of the agencies in the U.S. As a result, my particular branch is the largest centralised laboratory in Australia, and for that matter in the Southern Hemisphere. We deal both with all types of, we're a one-stop shop for all computer incident response as well as traditional computer forensics. So we deal with anything from engine management systems in vehicles all the way to large-scale corporate intrusions. We have a dual civilian and sworn squad. We have tactical members as well to provide our services. Most of the civilian staff came from the military, telcos, academia. We were quite lucky in that after September 11, we were given quite a large budget, a multi-million dollar budget, to try and hire some of the specialists out there rather than try and grow them internally. One of the things that Dan Larkin said in his keynote speech was about cooperation. In Australia, it's no different. We cooperate very well with Australian businesses as well as law enforcement agencies, both in our country and overseas. And I think that's the only way we can move forward in responding to the needs of the community. Thank you.
Thanks, Jason. Ovi.
The Department of Justice Computer Crime Intellectual Property Section Cyber Crime Lab, we're there primarily to support the CSIP's attorneys in their prosecutions of cyber crimes, as well as support them technically in any of their legislative initiatives that they help to get the laws passed. And when Jim first called me and told me about the OTA loop, I said, OTA loop? You know, I wasn't really familiar with it, but then when I started thinking about it, I said, well, it's the same thing that computer crime agents or system administrators apply every day when they're looking at information on their network. You know, they get some piece of anomalous activity and they observe it. They look at their evidence, the electronic evidence, and then they orient themselves, okay, well, what does this mean to me and what does this mean to the security of my system? Or the compromise, they analyze it and decide, how does it affect me? How does it affect my investigation, or how can it affect? And then what do I need to do with this information to act? So I thought it was a pretty interesting concept, and it's something that I think most system administrators are already doing. Just as a side note, I'll put in a plug. I'm also a co-host for a computer forensics, computer security, computer crime podcast called CyberSpeak that you can find on iTunes or what have you. Thanks.
Thanks, Ovi. Okay, Tim.
The Naval Criminal Investigative Service, can you...
Any microphone,
please? Oh, sorry. Yeah, please. So I'm with the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, and a lot of people... well, seen this on, you know, the TV show and all that, but actually NCIS is a civilian federal law enforcement agency. Most of the people there are, most of the agents there are all civilians, about 90% civilian. So they are heavily recruiting right now. I'm supposed to put that in there. So we have a booth right outside here. The good thing about NCIS, though, is that we're all over the world. We have offices in, you know, Far East, Singapore, London. So it's a good agency to work for. In regards to the cyber department itself, we have special agents are assigned as cyber agents. We also have computer scientists and investigative computer specialists that are assigned to us that work pretty much the full gamut of cyber altogether. Basically, we're talking about the both criminal investigations, counterintelligence investigations, counterterrorism investigations. But we do a lot more than just standalone forensics. We do network intrusions. We do the also cover specifically counterintelligence operations and investigations. So we cover a full gamut of the cyber capability. And of course, like with most of these other agencies, we're actually looking for highly technical people. So again, we have a booth outside here that if you have any questions or any interest in NCIS at all, just please visit the booth.
Or if you want to confess to anything, you can stop by the booth.
That too. So. I'm taking pictures. But that's pretty much it.
Andy.
I'm not used to speaking much before about 9 o'clock at night, so you have to bear with me here. With the IRS, we actually are part of an IG that does oversight of the IRS, but within the IRS are basically two investigative groups. The ones that most of you know are called the Criminal Investigation Division. They're actually part of the IRS, and that's the group that does the tax fraud investigations. Then the oversight group, which I'm part of, TIGDA, is the one that does basically the internal affairs, and we also do the computer security. My group is very fortunate to work with another group within the IRS called the Computer Security Incident Response Center. Some of those representatives are hiding in the back there. But together, what we do is we work on the overall integrity of the IRS networks, the IRS data, and any allegations of any problems where people are impersonating the IRS. Since November 21st, my bread and butter case has been phishing sites. I don't know how many of you have ever seen the phishing sites from IRS, but there's been about two or three groups that have just given us about 145 different sites since November 21st, and that's what I do now. Before that, most of what we do is we do active penetration tests. We do a lot of network security testing. We do a lot of analysis of access logs, just basically looking for unauthorized access. If anybody has a really good question, I think I might have had one discount for next year's taxes. I have to see if I brought that in the room, but we'll see if we get somebody a good 10% discount for next year.
Thanks, Haiti. Hop, you're up.
We're probably the only lettered agency sitting here that nobody's ever heard of, and it's not because we're a covert agency. How many of you ever heard of NW3C? You're my heroes. We're the National White Collar Crime Center. We're a non-profit corporation.
Business cards don't
DOJ.
Have letters on it. It's just a blank card.
That's an inside joke. And our mission is to provide free, that's in capital letters, at no cost to state and local law enforcement, training. And my focus for my group is training in computer forensics from first responder level to advanced level law enforcement computer forensics and cybercrime investigations. We teach all over the United States and are reaching out now to NW4C Canada. Anybody from Canada in the room? They thought we had a good model and replicated our training model up in Canada. We've taught in England. We're about to expand our teaching into Europe and some other places around the world. We're basically the guys that are teaching the people that are normally the first responder for PC level crimes. I've been doing it for, 15, 18 years around the United States, but that's kind of who we are. We partner with academia in a big way. We got partnerships with Purdue University, Florida State University, Virginia Commonwealth, Tennessee. Those partnerships are focused on providing curriculum and computer forensics tools to state and local law enforcement. We just finished a research project with FSU and are rolling out a tool that's going to be given to state and local law enforcement free that will help them out with online predator cases. Tools coming out of Purdue next semester when the graduate student finishes his thesis that's going to be a big help for state and local law enforcement. So we're kind of that trusted third party broker between state and local law enforcement, academia, and the private sector. And our real focus is providing training and tools and curriculum to state and local law enforcement.
Thanks, Hop. Tim.
As mentioned before, I'm responsible right now for the computer analysis response team unit, which is we have 90 different sites across the country, and where we have some type of forensics lab. I'm responsible for getting at least a couple examiners at each one of those locations, making sure they have the right equipment, software, tested and validated materials in order to do the examinations. I've had the opportunity to work with just about everybody here, and I do know about NW3C. We've adopted some of their classes, their basic and advanced data recovery analysis classes, as part of our initial curriculum to train and certify our examiners. Where we are in this loop here, pretty much we extract anything on digital media, so the case agents and the analysts have a chance to observe and orient themselves to where they want to go with their investigation. Most of our examiners don't really get into much of the weeds as far as what doing anything with the investigative aspect, because they're not supposed to. They're supposed to be an unbiased party, get in there, look at the material, extract everything that's possible to extract, and give it to those doing the investigation so they can move on. and they can go, you know, do their case as they wish. Am I making that noise?
It goes to my stomach.
Okay. No breakfast. Sorry.
Thanks, Tim. Mike.
Sorry. Go ahead.
Okay. NSA's missions, I think, are pretty well known. From the defensive side, they have been responsible for the past 50-plus years for the production of keys and codes that secure the United States communication systems and their information management systems today. And from the standpoint of how things have evolved, that mission has become much more difficult in recent years than it was in the past. When you think in terms of the OODA loop was created by Colonel Boyd from a tactical perspective, and there are certainly analogs to the OODA loop activity at the tactical level within the network topology. But here we're operating at the speed of light, not the speed of sound. And one of the things that we might think about in terms of the OODA loop is to how do we put our perimeter further out to create the opportunity to have a more effective response. Even though no matter how far out you put it, you're still dealing with the speed of light. Right now, it's somewhat chaotic. And there is something of an analog you might want to think about in terms of how the United States defended itself in the nuclear age. It created a dew line, a perimeter that sensed what the enemy was doing or what the enemy might be doing, and gave us some time to respond, the second response capability. As part of the solution here is not merely to defend. We also need to think in terms of how we go on the offense to deny, disrupt, or destroy those who would attempt to achieve a strategic gain through cyber.
Thanks, Mike. Bob, you're up.
Thanks. I think the analogy of the aircraft is pretty appropriate because within DoD right now, we are probably building the most sophisticated platform in the world, and that is the information assurance platform for the global information grid that we in the Department of Defense relies upon every single day to conduct operations around the world. And as this network becomes even more sophisticated, all the different weapons platforms completely dependent upon it, our requirement in building this weapons platform becomes even much, much more daunting. We're spending about $2.2 billion a year building this platform right now, and that's probably still not enough to be able to keep up with the threats that we have today and the threats that we project for tomorrow. This platform's got to be stealthy. This platform's got to be very agile. We've got to be able to, as indicated by the OODA loop analogy, we've got to be able to understand our adversary, to anticipate our adversary, to have an advance attack warning and response capability as far out as we can get, well ahead of the cycle time that's going to be affecting our network. Today we have PKI technology, the most sophisticated in the world, providing authentication and access control to this weapons platform for about 3.5 to 4 million individuals that use it on a regular basis. We have 100,000 personnel that are the core people that are managing this weapons platform every day. Every one of them in the next 3 years are going to be certified to the highest commercial standards to have a flying license to be able to fly this airplane and manage it effectively. We have to add all sorts of new technologies in it every day to keep up with this very, very fast cycle time. We used to talk about Moore's Law. We're now talking about Metcalfe's Law, the Law of Transformation, which means we have to, as Mike says, we have to keep up with literally the speeds of light to be able to be sophisticated enough to take care of the adversaries of today. We're going to be relying largely on COTS, which puts a tremendous stress on us, but that's the only way we're going to be able to build this platform. This platform will today rely upon defense in depth technologies, but in the future, which is really upon us now, it's going to rely on defense in breadth, which means it's got to be much, much more diverse and capable to include what is really one of our biggest challenges right now in the Department of Defense is software assurance. We have to be able to better understand software. We have to rely upon the commercial sector to raise the bar as high as it can go, or this weapons platform is not going to be able to fly effectively. So that's what we're all about. It's an exciting time. If you all want to help be a member of that platform and help us fly it, we'd love to have you. We're out recruiting every single day. We need all the help we can get. Thank you.
Thanks, Bob. Ken, don't go postal.
Okay. Okay, if anybody has any, like, grandma's cookies that were mailed to you about 10 years ago and you never found them, I can't hear your problem. I can't track that down for you. But we do, my group does the computer forensics for the Postal Service. Office of Inspector General is the group that I work for. And we have a team of people that are scattered out across the United States that do computer forensics. Postal Service has 800,000 employees, so we have a massive number of computers that support that infrastructure, and we do a lot of investigations to support the crime that occurs regarding the Postal Service. A few years ago, when I met Jim Christie, I was over at DCIS, DISA, Defense Information Systems Agency. I imagine there might be a couple of DISA people in the crowd here. Good people over at DOD and the DOD CERT, protecting your infrastructure. But at that time, what we did was, regarding this OODA loop thing, I was really reminded of the interesting culture of the attacker community and how it was very different than the law enforcement culture. Law enforcement's more interested in the idea of one single attack, and they come in, badge and gun and the authority that the law kind of holds true. But what happened was we actually had, when I was with DOD at the time, we had a conference where we pulled all these people in that were sysops. They were people that, it was a conference whereby we had people that ran IRC chat channels. And it was an interesting crowd of people, and it really highlighted the whole concept of attack, counterattack, a whole circular, continuous process, as opposed to one or two confrontations with an enemy or with a criminal. And it really made me see the massive difference between law enforcement model of protecting themselves and going after cybercrime and how we need to change our culture in law enforcement to move over closer to that more of an IRC-looking culture that can respond quickly. And as people have mentioned here, in the very small time frame, the idea of attack, counterattack, the model of a circular process as opposed to one or two engagements. Very different for the law enforcement community, the conservative folks that we are. So interested in your comments on things like that and the counterintelligence component of cyber defense.
Thanks, Ken. You want to share that, Mike?
Thanks.
Dave?
Good morning. Dave Thomas. I'm the Deputy Assistant Director for the Cyber Division of the FBI. Cyber is the number three priority of the FBI behind counterterrorism and counterintelligence. So as you can see, it's a very high profile for our director of what we work on a daily basis. Within the Cyber Division, we work counterterrorism, counterintelligence, and criminal computer intrusions, which I've done for the past, on and off now, for the past 6 years. I also have responsibility for our cyber action teams, which we deploy worldwide and for any type of major intrusion investigation at any given time. For any given week, we probably have somebody in 6 to 7 countries around the world working on cyber incidents. During the presentations that we've heard throughout the last couple of days, questions have come up from different people on who do we report cybercrime to? Can law enforcement work at this issue? And what are our capabilities and our strengths and our weaknesses? And I think you have a very excellent panel here to answer some of those questions where some of the other speakers probably could not. And we welcome your questions and look forward to answering those for you. Thank you.
Thanks, Dave. Before we start the questions, I guess I ought to say what DC3 is. I'm an Air Force Office Special Investigations Special Agent, Computer Crime Investigator for 20 years. I'm assigned to the Defense Cyber Crime Center up in Linthicum, Maryland, Baltimore. And we have three major entities within the Defense Cyber Crime Center. We have the world's largest accredited digital forensics lab, about 90 people. We also have a training program, the Defense Cyber Investigative Training Academy, that trains The investigators and forensic examiners for the Department of Defense. We also train FBI, Secret Service, and State Department's diplomatic security service agents. If you're in DOD, these courses are open to you as well for free. You just pay your TDYs. And in the Defense Cybercrime Institute, which I'm the director of, and we do the research and development of tools, and as Tim Huffa mentioned, the validation, the testing and validation of those tools to make sure they do what they're supposed to do, because we're supporting a crime lab. So kind of a center of excellence for the Department of Defense in supporting the Naval Criminal Investigative Service, Office of Special Investigations, Defense Criminal Investigative Service, all the DOD law enforcement counterintelligence investigative organizations. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to you guys, and we'll answer your questions the best we can. Yes, sir, in the red. Real loud, sir. Everybody can hear you, please. Anybody want to take a shot at that?
Well, I think I'll take the first round, but I think if you look at any analogy, the best offense is a good defense. So that's what we depend on. If you look at the OODA loop and the concept, the fact that you can't act against the adversary on the other side, we as the federal government can, but it doesn't mean that you don't have things that you can do and that you can't act and you can't be offensive, and that offense for you would be the security of that system to prevent that attacker on the other side from gaining that access.
I guess what I'm pointing to, though, is in the frontier, you say make the assumption that within your action, within your observation, orientation, and decision, you're going to act upon the adversary, not to actually act upon yourself. Right? And that, I'm just saying, it takes a very different form, because if you only act upon yourself based on your adversary, then you're not getting inside their loop. Frankly, you're just riding their loop upon your...
Well, let me take a stab at it. So, my answer probably won't be as long as your question, though. In the Department of Defense, you know, pretty large business, like Bob was saying, you know, one of the largest enterprises in the world, if not the largest. And what we've done is we've integrated and built a process with the system administrators and the first responders, the certs, and we've built in the law enforcement counterintelligence community into that. So we have a joint task force for global network operations, and we have intel folks who are observing the adversaries, multiple adversaries, whether it's a foreign intelligence service, whether it's a group of hackers. You know, so we're gathering criminal intelligence, foreign intelligence, and we're looking at where they're going to attack, what are they interested in, and we've put the intel community, the counterintelligence community, the law enforcement community, the legal community, got to get the prosecutors and the lawyers involved, along with the system administrators, first responders, and it's a team sport. This is not an individual. This is an organization. So as a business, I would say what you do is you have a relationship with the law enforcement, whether it's state and local or the federal law enforcement agencies that are going to respond, help you respond to that, and maybe they can. You develop that relationship, maybe they can gather intel to tell you what to protect, like Dave said.
Higher integration than what exists today. So, yeah, I appreciate that.
And I think also, when you're talking about getting inside your adversary's decision model, I think any good system administrator out there is doing that constantly. If they see a systematic attack occurring on their network or to their network, they're trying to find out, okay, well, what is this guy's pattern? Where is he going to be striking next so that they can start fortifying their network so they don't have any other compromised boxes or they start closing loops? So that's how that system administrator is getting inside the adversary's OODA loop. Okay. Well, we are in a reactive, yes, but there are proactive things that you can do when you're being attacked.
I mean, you could misinform me. That would definitely raise the cost of my observation and orientation.
Yeah, there are some behind-the-scenes channels where various agencies share information, and some of that are intrusion detection logs. So if we see somebody doing certain kinds of probes in one point, we're going to protect ourselves in other points as well.
I think we all agree.
Yeah. And you're absolutely right, and I think to a certain extent that's happening at a kind of a probably not at the level we'd like to see it, but I'll throw down Carnegie Mellon right now as a very good example of a group of people and that are part of this community in the private sector and federal law enforcement holding hands and putting up that fence and sharing some very valuable information. And just quickly, I'll make a real quick point I'll put on my old hat as a old guy that was at the state level reacting to all kinds of intrusions on the state system and private systems. What we found that we had to do was make a concerted effort to allow the victim to choose whether they wanted to be a victim or not. So our focus was to get the system up and running, and if during that process we could collect evidence, and certainly we did, but we left it to that business owner as to whether they wanted to be a victim. And hopefully that's going to change in the future, but I mean, that's kind of where we were a year ago. I just took off my hat a year ago, and that's where we were locally.
Yes, sir, in the front row. Real loud, so the guys in the back can hear.
The exact same place. I mean, you have FBI office, every field office in every state. You have United States Secret Service, Postal. I mean, any one federal agency who has jurisdiction over cybercrime would certainly take the complaint. There's certainly partnerships out there also. Then every FBI office, we have something called InfraGuard, 14,000 members, companies, large, small, where they have a relationship with the FBI to report computer intrusions. Secret Service has something similar with the New York Electronic Crime Task Forces across the country. There's all types of partnerships between the federal government and industry where we want your information and we want the reporting to come through so we can assist you. But I think a lot of it depends on, and one question we get all the time is, who do we report to? And it really doesn't matter who. It's develop a relationship with some entity so you know who to call when you pick up the phone, because there's several agencies out there that will be willing to help you in several avenues to get that information in.
And speaking from a state and local level, that's key. What you said is exactly right. It's up to you to establish that relationship. Trust me, these guys are so busy, they're not out there looking for more work to do. They got plenty of work to do. So it really behooves you to find those people in your community who can respond at a local level, because it may not be something that the FBI or anybody else really can respond to.
Anybody have any idea how many law enforcement agencies there are in the United States? It's over 20,000 federal, state, and local law enforcement agencies, and you know what? They're not all created equal. So if your law enforcement agency that you develop a relationship with, your local one, doesn't have the capability, help them. You know, I've had several folks come to me and say, hey, you know, at this conference, how do I help my local law enforcement? And you volunteer, and you train them, and you develop that relationship with them, and everybody benefits. But there's 20,000 law enforcement agencies just in the United States, and they all aren't created equal.
And we interact with almost every state and local lab around the country. What we see are people from the LE side beginning to forge those relationships, but Jim's exactly right. I mean, if you're Boeing or Cisco or Intel or whoever you are, and you can help that local lab out with funding for equipment or training, trust me, that helps with building that relationship, and trust me, they need the funding. There's kind of a choke point for funding at the state and local level. They will welcome you with open arms.
Anybody else? Yes, sir. Real loud, please.
Okay, so...
Which attack are you referring to? The one you speaking about, the Israeli?
Blue Frog.
Yeah.
Okay, well, they're not in the United States, are they?
I'm not sure.
I think it was an Israeli company. We don't have jurisdiction in Israel. But we did get involved in another recent attack on another anti-spam group. And I know I've been very active in the anti-spam community. And, you know, there's some other things some other agencies that do work in this area. But one thing I was going to also suggest to the other gentleman that asked the question, you know, if you are a victim of a crime, you should probably first contact your local law enforcement agency, and hopefully that local law enforcement agency has developed relationships with people like Dave Thomas and the FBI. Most federal agencies have jurisdictions for their specific scope of the world. In my particular case, if the incident is not IRS related, I generally don't have jurisdiction. The FBI and Secret Service pretty much have jurisdiction everywhere. Now, one of the liaison agencies that you can go to as a non-government entity is U.S. CERT. I'm sorry, a friend of mine, Jerry Dixon, is here representing U.S. CERT. I don't see him out here. You out there, Jerry? No. U.S. CERT is a place where you can call and try and get some support, but the reality is they get so many complaints that there's not enough people to work all these things. And, you know, there was an attack very recently. In fact, I was in Orlando at the time and coordinated some assistance. So we do get involved. You just don't always see it in the press.
Is Richard Downing in here? You want to jump in on this, on the international aspects of this? Introduce yourself for us.
Richard Downing, I'm with the Computer Crime and Intellectual Property Section.
And just a real quick on that, Jim, if you take a look at it, you say, you know, you really haven't seen anything, but go out and take a little bit closer look. If you look at the Encheta case in California, which was one of the largest botnet cases ever investigated that was taken down by the FBI, Seattle. One of the second largest bot cases in the world taken down within the last year. Funet case, where botnets again were taking down companies within the United States. We do these cases, and other federal agencies do, every day. We arrest people in other countries almost every single day. So, yes, is it difficult to do international investigations? Absolutely, but that's all we do. 80% of what the FBI does is international investigations. My top, Zotop. We deployed a team in 8 days, arrested people in Turkey and Morocco. Other agencies do the exact same thing. So you may not see it every day, but as he said, it is getting done, and there's a lot of international cooperation out there. Countries really want to come together and work this, and they are working with us and other agencies.
And I know what's frustrating to victims is that when you report a crime, law enforcement generally doesn't talk to you and tell you what we're doing until the investigation reaches conclusion and is adjudicated. So I know that's frustrating for everyone. In some cases, in the old days, the law enforcement agencies wouldn't talk to one another. But you can see we're all here on this panel, and we're all doing a much better job at sharing information within law enforcement, within the government channels, with whoever's doing the investigation. But I absolutely understand your frustration by not knowing what's going on. But things may be going, and they're just not talking to you. So.
And frankly, some of it's on our side, too. We need to be better at talking with you. I think we need to come out more so and discuss with you more of the problems and be more forthcoming regarding an investigation, what we're doing, and how we're helping you. It doesn't have to be cloaked in massive secrecy. It does have to be a certain amount of partnership. But I do think that just as each of you have to take a greater role on your own computers at home, each of your companies, you're going to have to take a much greater role, a stronger role in your company, being aggressive, getting in front of the attack, trying to sell as much as you can within your own company is how you need to be proactive. Find out, be looking at your firewall logs. When are the attacks more are coming stronger than other times? Is there some correlation to that? You know, what types of things are they searching for when people are coming to your infrastructure and feeding that back to your people that are doing your investigations within your own corporation? So you're going to have to be more aggressive on the front end. If anybody's ever had any background in counterintelligence, it's kind of been a stepchild in some of the organizations before doing counterintelligence. But you have to be your own counterintelligence agent in the future. And some of that counterintelligence component is not just sitting back and being defensive. I think, as you were mentioning earlier, it's a proactive measure. You go out and find out what, put in honeypot or whatever you need to do to figure out what types of things people are interested in regarding your infrastructure.
I think we only have time for one more question before we get kicked out. Yes, sir.
You're absolutely right, and I've heard that 100 times. And the solution to that is to get with that agency, get with that whoever is going to respond to your incident before the incident happens and tell them what your parameters are. Tell them what you can and can't do based on your business survival. Have those agreements up front. Spend the time with the FBI in your local office, with Secret Service in your community, with the state police, whoever's going to respond to that incident, and sit down as a group and educate each other. Because there are things that law enforcement need to respond to that if they're going to prosecute it, if being the key word. And there are things that you have to do for business reasons that may kind of put hurdles in front of them. But if you know what those hurdles are before you walk through the door, with that badge in your pocket, then you're going to have a much better relationship and you're going to be able to move forward with an investigation in a just a better way. So,
I know in the Department of Defense, we heard the same thing from commanders, forever. You guys come in, you take control of my network. Well, that's really not how it works in the Department of Defense. It's up to that commander whether they want to continue to leave their network open to the bad guy to allow us to continue to running that investigation, or whether we're going to collect the information that's right there with the assistance of that system administrator and that commander, and then we're going to take it back and evaluate that and run our investigation, keeping that commander apprised of what we're doing. So we hear that all the time, but in practice, I think we've all matured as agencies, and we don't operate in that way. I think we work in a partnership with the victims today. So everybody is not created equal, though. There's 20,000 law enforcement agencies out there, so developing that relationship with them ahead of time, like Hop was saying, and setting out what the ground rules are ahead of time, I think is the way to go. We're about out of time here, so I just had two slides that I wanted to throw up, because I'm going to advertise. DOD, we have the annual DOD Cybercrime Conference. If you're affiliated with a federal agency or a law enforcement agency, it's open to the Five Eye countries, Canada, UK, Australia, New Zealand, and the U.S. It's going to be, you can go to this website, dodcybercrime.com. So, and then I wanted to announce the DOD, the DC3 Digital Forensics Challenge. Our focus is forensics, digital forensics. And we're looking for outside-the-box thinking, so we're going to hold a challenge. And anybody with a U.S. citizen within the continental United States can play. We're going to have up to four team members. You can do this as an individual. Academia, students, faculty can put a team together. And what we're going to give you is a challenge in some of these different areas to see how you can respond and create a forensic report and what kind of evidence you can gather. And then the winning team will be announced on the 15th of December. We'll fly that team up to four members to attend our conference. If you want more information, we have a booth, and I'm sure a lot of these guys will hang around because we're going to get kicked out of here, and where the NCIS booth is, and then we have a DC3 booth right next to it, and we'll certainly take on your questions at that point. So appreciate you all coming. Thank you. Thank you.